I want you to recognize mechanisms. I want you to understand how those mechanisms lead to step-by-step sequential therapy. It really is simple to do. And you should not have to have my patients being an oh no on your list, on your office schedule any longer. You will find mold patients, people with exposure to water damaged buildings, more often than even I do, and I specialize in this. 95% of my practice comes from over 100 miles away, and mold illness patients, and that's kind of jargon and definition we'll get to in a minute, lead the list. You'll probably have more Ciguatera patients than I do. There's a huge upsurge in Ciguatera in the Gulf of Mexico. We used to just think about Caribbean and Hawaii and Indonesia, but now it's almost in an explosive form. The first toxin-forming blue-green algae, Cylindra spermopsis, were found in Florida in 1994. Microcystis now dominates Lake County and Sumter County, the Okalaha watershed. If you go to Lake Apopka, Lake Harrods, Lake Griffin, Lake Dora, you will find microcystis like crazy. We argue about Lyme disease very frequently. It's an ongoing source of difficulty between physicians. Specifically, tick-borne illness is hard to recognize. There are mechanisms to make it easier for you. I guess in all of these syndromes, I want you to use a two-tiered case definition. The first tier comes from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention when they defined Fusteria. This is an illness, a dinoflagellar illness that I first described in the wild. It had been described in laboratories in 1995 in NC State. In my hometown of Pocomoke, Maryland, there was first outbreak of Fusteria illness in 1997, 1998. And that really changed my career from being a rural outpatient family practice physician, very happy to be in a small town, to one where I began fascinating with research modalities with illnesses that are extremely common. So the CDC changed my name from FISH, I like that name a lot because it's a fish-borne illness, to PEAS, possible estrogen-associated syndrome. And they said, we should look for the potential for exposure. And if you're thinking about a mold patient, you've been in a water-damaged building with evidence of microbial growth afterwards. Secondly, absence of confounders. I mean, we can't have untreated diabetes or untreated hepatitis. We can't have, you know, acute renal failure going and still make one of these toxin diagnoses. And then we must have a multi-system, multi-symptom illness, which means 4 of 8 organ systems will be represented. So when I said, oh no, here's 25 health symptoms, well, that sounds like one of mine. Average is 21 out of syndrome of 38. And I do have some handouts with some of this information. Perhaps we can make that available afterwards. But specifically, if patients meet the first tier of the case definition, then you go to the second tier, a very restrictive second tier, to say, do they have evidence of innate immune illness? And I'm going to show you some slides for visual contrast sensitivity testing. VCS is non-invasive. It's reproducibly reliable. It's portable. It's something you can do in your office very simply. And if you have a deficit in visual contrast, there's going to be some neurotoxicant to which you've been exposed, unless you're the 1% or less of patients with a false positive. There are 92% of patients with these illnesses that have a deficit in VCS, and you can get a good idea in 5 minutes. Genetic predisposition, my gracious sakes, HLA-DR is easy to do. LabCorp will give that to you. It's a insurance covers the test. There are specific HLA-DR haplotypes where people will be susceptible to these illnesses. They're different by illness type. But you will also find some people will look at the person with an illness crazy and say, look, I've worked in the same office building. How come 75% of us aren't sick and the other 25% are? Look at their HLA. You'll find night and day difference. One group susceptible, they get sick if there's exposure. One group's exposed, not susceptible, they don't get sick. We also look at melanocyte-stimulating hormone. MSH is a hypothalamic compound. It's made in the ventral medial nucleus of the hypothalamus. It is singularly important in regulatory functions, nerve function, endocrine function, hormone function, immune function. And once MSH deficiency occurs, and it will in over 98% of these illness patients, you will see dysregulation of response.